Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. Steelers went on the road in Week 6 down to Miami and pulled out another clunker as they got smoked, absolutely dominated on both sides of the ball. Dave, they lose 30-15, and not only that, they lose their quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger, who had a bad game before he got hurt, had a bad game when he came back. And now he's going to miss a few games, starting with this week's game in New England with left meniscus surgery this morning that's already taken place.
Yeah, well, we know he's going to miss. In fact, you know, David, I'd like to start off probably by saying we could probably just record the intro and the outro, and then I can go back through the archives and piece together a complete show, because I think a lot of what we're going to talk about today is stuff that we've kind of talked about in the past here. So we could just save ourselves the trouble here and just piece this thing together. No, but in all seriousness, we don't really know how long Roethlisberger is going to miss right now. I mean, I think we all know he's going to miss the Sunday game against New England. They have the bye week after that. You know, can he return in time for the week? Nine game against the Baltimore Ravens? I suppose it's a possibility. You know, supposedly this isn't a full blown, you know, kind of meniscus, you know, a repair, if you will, more of a kind of a cleanup. I'm you know, from what I understand. So, you know, the fact of the matter is, this team right now is 4-2. They have New England coming to town, and there's a lot wrong with the team.
Yeah, there's a lot wrong with the team. And Dave, I just, you know, we keep coming back to this home road thing where Ben is extraordinarily good on the at home and you know, bad on the road. There's no other way to put it. His QBR, I think, you know, as they've refined this number, it comes to show more than just passing stats. It takes into account everything you do. If you fumble the football, if you run, if you do different things. He had a 4.9 QBR yesterday, which is the second lowest in the NFL this year, just ahead of Fitzpatrick, just behind Fitzpatrick's six interception game and Mariota's 17-10 loss to Oakland. Both of those happened in Week 3. He also has the second highest score against Kansas City, which just happened 2 weeks ago behind the Jimmy Garoppolo's game against Arizona. It's so stark how good he's been at home and how bad he's been on the road. And again, yesterday, he was bad before he got hurt, and we came back in the second half. He was poor. The first four throws of the half were really bad throws, overthrowing guys and including an interception into traffic. And I don't know what to make of it. You know, we've kind of hit on this thing now for four or five straight weeks, and it just becomes seemingly more extreme each week.
All right, let's talk about the playing down to the record against sub 500 teams, and what do you expect Tomlin to do? What hasn't he done? Is there the play better versus sub 500 teams button that he's not pushing? Do you think he's reminding his team about, you know, what has happened in the past? You know, what's the magic pill here? Everybody has identified the problem and that's gone on. You know, and it's been done for going on 3 or 4 years.
A couple years. For
you know,
sure.
3 or 4 years that we've written. I've written about that time. I think I have posts all the way back as far as 2013 talking about record against sub 500 teams and all like that. People talk about this every time it happens because it happens.
And the short answer is nobody has an answer. I mean, if there was an answer, you know, a couple of years ago, we wouldn't be seeing this right now. You know, Gene Collier wrote about this issue last week and said, you know, this is a sign of a maturing team. They took care of the Jets because the Jets qualify as one of those teams coming in as they did at 1-3 in a desperate team and not a terrible team on paper. A team that, you know, probably should have been in the playoffs last year, maybe even in front of the Steelers. You know, then it's a question of, is it just at home or is it just on the road that these types of things happen? I don't know. I also think when you talk about – when you ask a guy, are you looking past this game, the answer may well be no. They may be focused on the game, but maybe subconsciously they feel like they should win the game. I don't have a good answer, and I haven't heard a good answer yet, because if you have good answers for things like this, then problems get solved, and this one obviously hasn't been solved. The only other thing I'll throw out there, and I threw this out there pretty aggressively when the Steelers lost to Kansas City last year, when everybody said, you know, that's inexcusable, you know, even though Landry Jones and Al Villanueva are making their first career starts or whatever it was, and the Chiefs are 1-5, you know, you should never lose to a team like that. The Chiefs won 10 in a row. And again, this Miami team hasn't played well. There's no doubt about it. But there were some things that were different this week. They got two starters back on the O-line. They do have a talented defensive line. I will say I was shocked at how well their secondary played and how little separation the Steelers receivers were able to get. But at the same time, Ben was getting, you know, the offensive line just got – they got run over on both lines, offensive line and defensive line. The Steelers got absolutely dominated. So having said that, you take all those things into consideration, and the fact that, you know, everybody always comes back to, you know, everybody in this league lives in big houses because they're all getting paid. Clearly the better team won the game yesterday.
So you're saying if the Dolphins go 10-6, this loss is okay?
I'm not saying I'm saying the Dolphins aren't going 10-6, because we saw that Ryan Tannehill is not a great quarterback. He is an average NFL quarterback at best. But the Steelers got their doors blown off on both lines, and that's what happened in Philadelphia. And you know, they barely held their own against Cincinnati at home. And this is a disturbing trend that the Steeler offensive lines maybe aren't, or just Steeler lines, both lines, maybe aren't as good. I think the D line is questionable, you know, obviously without Hayward. And the O line is probably a bit overrated right now.
I guess the thing that gets me is, okay, yeah, we get the narrative. We've gotten the narrative since 2012, 2013. Tomlin and the Steelers play down to sub-500 teams. Okay, but I mean, you know, people get on Twitter and the remark is Tomlin's got to stop losing to sub-500 teams. It's tiring on several levels. It's tiring because it happens. It's tiring because people talk about it but don't have a solution. And you have to know that they talk about this, you know, before they play teams with sub, you know, especially teams like the Dolphins and the Jets, you know, last week. It's hard to imagine that it doesn't get brought up in a meeting that, look, this team is 1-4, but this is National Football League. You can't take any team lightly. And that's why I don't buy all this trap game bullshit, if you will. I mean, it's just, this is the NFL. I can buy it more in college when you're playing Appalachian State and you're looking ahead to playing, you know, Clemson the next week or whatever, and you're just totally dismissing. But, you know, we've seen how many times, you know, stupid penalties, turnovers in a game can really turn the tide in an NFL game. So, yes, we get it that they're doing this and they're losing. Now, you know, just like any other loss, you have to figure out why you lost and kind of move on from it. But, yeah, I mean, it's frustrating, and I understand fans getting mad, but the whole fire Tomlin, you know, stuff, fire Haley and all like that, I mean, save that. I mean, this is a 4-2 record, a 4-2 team right now. Yeah, they lost Roethlisberger. Yes, they're probably going to get their doors blown off by New England. It'd be silly to suggest anything other than that. But, you know, look, I think this is still a team that can win a division. However, comma, and we're going to be talking about this quite a bit today, I reckon. This defense, David, I've said it time and time again, I'm worried about it. They can't get after the quarterback. They don't have outside linebackers. it's a mess. Yeah,
is the Steelers outside linebacker position group the worst in the NFL? Without knowing every single position group in the league, we probably aren't qualified to perfectly answer that, but it's pretty damn – I mean, here we are 6 games in, and it's a joke. I mean, Moats has 2 touch-me sacks, and they got nothing else. They don't get – what is – they have 0 sacks on the road. They have another game where I think, Tannehill's jersey didn't get dirty. McCullers bumped him one time. Maybe somebody else got a hand on him another time. Not hurried, not pressured, not hit, not taken to the ground, no sacks, no turnovers. Not good.
2.5 sacks from outside linebackers right now. They're on pace to record – outside linebackers this year are on pace to record 6.66 sacks, for it is a human number.
Moats has 2?
Moats.
Jarvis has a half?
Moats has 1.5. Timmons has, Ciccolo has 1. And the NFL's not giving Jarvis credit for anything. So.
Yes. Okay. Ciccolo had that 1 last week, right?
So 2.5 over the first 6 games from your outside linebackers. Cameron Hayward leads the team with 3 sacks. Fitz Williams, of all people, a backup inside linebacker, is 2nd on the team with 2 sacks. And
they have 9 total, right? I mean, it's not a lot to say after that.
They have 8 total.
8 total. 8 in 6 games. So, all right. So they're on pace for 20 sacks, basically. Let's talk about it a little bit in terms of individual performances. I think it's hard to identify individually guys who didn't play well when your run defense gives up 222 yards because nobody played well. I mean, Robert Golden got caught up in the wash a bunch of times. Jarvis Jones couldn't set the edge on the right side. Artie Burns had a miserable game in all facets. We could go on down the list. I mean, the fact is nobody in that group did well in any facet of the game. So, I mean, I almost feel bad, singling out individual guys, but I mean, even just down to the last touchdown where Golden misses the tackle. Jarvis Jones is the only guy in the picture as Ajayi runs, 62 yards down the right side, where they're in a run blitz and they're obviously trying to stuff the play. And you can get caught in those types of plays because you're not going to have anybody at the second line of defense. And they get caught. And when Golden misses the tackle for what would have been a 4 or 5 yard gain, it's just off to the races.
Don't let Cocker off the hook either on a couple of those plays, because he didn't do a good job on the outside against a few runs as well either. Now,
no, he did not. He puts his head down, not wrapping up. I mean,
I was thinking about this when I was lying when I went to bed at 3 a.m. and staring at this ceiling, David, what things we're going to talk about. When you think about Steelers cornerbacks, let's go from the year 2000 to 2008, 2009, 2010. All right, 10 years. What do you think about when you think about corners that played on those Steelers teams?
Physical, couldn't catch the ball. That's about it. Physical and couldn't catch the ball.
That's good. Will played to run well, right?
Yeah.
What do you think about when you think about Artie Burns, Ross Cockrell, Justin Gilbert?
Well, I'm not going to write any narrative on Burns or Gilbert because we just flat out haven't seen enough. I mean, we talk about most of those guys, including Troy, when you get to the safeties and Ike Taylor, they didn't see the field, in a whole season as much as already seen it. And Sean Davis have seen it here in the first 6 games. So they get a lot to learn. I mean, those two guys have a lot to learn. Cockrell, I think we know what Cockrell is. He's a long defender who can stay well with guys. I mean, did a good job breaking up passes last week on Brandon Marshall, did a good job on AC Green. Not going to be great in run support. Ed does have a nose for the football, so I'll give him that historically. And what, the little that we've seen in kind of 20 some games, he is around the football, recovered some fumbles. But yeah, I'll leave the chapter open on the other two guys.
Yeah, and look, here's where I'm going with this. You go back to the college tape on Artie. More of a ball hawk, more of a physical athletic specimen than he is a physical player. You know, he was just brutal getting trapped, you know, poking his head inside yesterday on some of those runs. I can forgive the deep pass cover three with him not trusting not trusting Mike Mitchell in the center of the field. I'm more forgiving on something like that. I think he'll learn from that. But he's got to learn how to play this run better, and he's got to become more than just a run a player out of bounds type player. You know, and that's what worries me. And Ross Cockrell, and we talked about this recently, Ross Cockrell had some good moments in that game yesterday. They were few and far between, but on a couple of pass breakups, he really showed something. One in particular, I think, in that second half, just might have been his best pass breakup as a professional. But you know, when it comes to the run, these guys have got to play better. And look, I think you can, when it comes to corners, if you get a guy, I've said this countless times, if you get a pass rush whatsoever against an opposing quarterback, your secondary automatically becomes 5 times better than already is. It is, because you're not having to cover these guys. But when you have these teams that come out and they're able to establish a run game, and they get a quarterback in rhythm, throwing a lot of short passes, and let's face it, that's a lot what Tannehill did, right? A lot of quick passes outside of the couple escape pockets, which the Steelers did not do a good job really in containment on that, and him throwing two deep balls over their heads, one with Burns in coverage, and I don't know what the hell William Gay was thinking on that one, like he was trying to bait him to
and didn't turn and run. I mean, you know, he even felt like when the ball was in the air, he felt like he could make a play on it. I mean, he's just got
to
do better.
Yeah, like he's trying to bait him, right? I mean, like, I dare you to throw it. And then it's like, oh, crap, he threw it. He threw it over my head. You know, I just would like to see these defensive backs get a little bit more physical. And Justin Gilbert, you know, if, judging by his Cleveland Browns tape, he's not one willing, not one known to want to run up there and shove his face in the fan either. But I think you can hide a lot of that stuff if you can get those guys to play to run a little bit better. And then obviously if you can get after the quarterback. And I don't know about you, they made Jay look like Barry Sanders and made Ryan Tannehill look like Tom Brady in this game.
Yeah, I mean, what, the fourth guy since 1970 to rush for 200 yards, and yeah, you know, we got 62 of them on essentially the last play. Okay, whatever. He was gouging the Steelers. I think you put it down at 8 runs of 10 or more yards, and that's what you saw. The yards after contact, I think, was 127 maybe for either him or for the team. I saw just incredibly poor tackling. And Mike said immediately in the post game, he mentioned it twice, the tackling was bad. Yep, the tackling was bad. And when your tackling's bad and they can run on you and you're not getting any pressure on the quarterback, no matter how bad that quarterback is, if he's not worried about getting banged up and beat up back there, then he's eventually going to find guys, and that's what he did. And he made he didn't make a lot of plays. Tannehill didn't. He made a couple plays. The Dolphins kept shooting themselves in the foot. They had a touchdown called back. They missed and had a field goal blocked. I mean, you know, this game, you know, thinking that this game was 30-15 and it was close, I think this was a worse loss than the Eagles' loss when the score was 34-3.
Well, I don't know how to kind of measure those two, because they definitely got their doors blown off. You know, I'll tell you this, this one still felt a lot closer. It really did. I mean, look, even when
they had a chance, because you know they were down 15 points, so they had a chance all the way, you know, until the end. I mean, hypothetically, they're still in the game even with the onside kick. So it's, you know, it never got past the two score game because the Dolphins screwed it up so many times. I mean, really, they screwed it up so many times.
Yeah, let's not forget they had a blocked field goal, they had a missed field goal,
a touchdown call back
on an illegal formation. Yeah, they absolutely they left a lot of points out there as well too. Yeah, we could be talking about close to a 40 burger for the Dolphins in this game. You know, very, very few bright spots. I thought Tua did some nice things on a defensive side of the football. And
let's go back to the offense and to a couple things. One is, didn't we think Le'Veon Bell was going to get 25, 30 touches in this game? Did the Steelers, I mean, he ran it 10 times, I think 8 in the first half. Obviously the whole world knows that 3rd-and-1 call with Landry Jones in there was incredible. I mean, it's an incredible call when you have 1st-and-15 and Bell goes twice for 14 yards and you don't give it to him a third time. I don't think anybody in the world. And people who listen to this show know that I don't like to, you know, pick out singular play calls and say, you know, that was a dumb call. They work on this all week and they know their playbook, but I did not understand that call, and I know you put up a GIF of Landry Jones, or actually a still shot, where if he looks at, I think it's Xavier Grimble coming over the middle, he's got a guy wide open coming out of a break for a, you know, 7-yard gain.
Yeah, and here's the way, and I wrote about that very play last night, and I'm like you, David, and this is kind of my poorly written lead in the post. I put, in general, I don't get too caught up in bashing individual plays calls that the Pittsburgh Steelers offense runs on a week-to-week basis. Sure, you could probably go through each and every game and circle 5 or 6 plays based on results and find faults or easily state what probably should have been called. And then I go on with that disclaimer out of the way. It's hard not to knock that one particular play, that took place with, you know, and here's the thing, you know, look, was that the one play that lost this game? Should we circle it 86 times with red ink and talk about it for the remainder of the week? Absolutely not. But it was a big play because at the time the Steelers are trailing the Dolphins 9-8. There's 3:07 left in the first half. Your offense is facing a 3rd-and-1 on their own 46-yard line. Roethlisberger was out of the game. Your backup Landry Jones was in, essentially operating his first real offensive series of the regular season. You know, and look, here's the thing. You don't get it. You punt. And then they come down and score a touchdown, and then they get the ball back first in the second half, and you have a banged-up Roethlisberger that doesn't even get onto the field until 9:01 left in the third quarter. 9:01. So I bet that knee was nice and ripe by the time that happened. And as you stated, on that particular drive, yeah, they had the a false start on Alejandro Villanueva sandwiched in there. Le'Veon Bell had just had runs for 12, 8, and 6 yards all to the right side. And now you want your backup quarterback, who's yet to attempt a pass in the game, to throw something out into the flat to David Johnson, who has how many catches this year. You have your jumbo package in there, two tight ends and whatever you want to call David Johnson at that point. He was lined up as fullback. I mean, you have one of arguably the best running backs in the league in Le'Veon Bell back there. Give him the damn ball and see if he can get a yard even against a stacked box.
I'm with you. I don't know what more to add to that. It was a crazy call, and you know, as you say, you know, the Steelers are in this game. They're in this game at halftime. You know, they're in the game. They come out in the second half. Ben comes back from the dinged up knee injury, and he just is awful. His first 4 throws are way off target, and then he throws the interception. And then from there, you know, they really got nothing going. You look at just kind of the end game numbers: 297 yards of total offense, with 97 coming in the drive that they scored the touchdown with, you know, 50 seconds to go or whatever the right number was. They get the ball with 4 minutes and 20 seconds. Eli Rogers and Antonio Brown both fail to get out of bounds. Now, I'm not sure the referees made the right call on either of those plays, Dave, but kind of somewhat inexplicable, right? The lack of urgency, kind of that last drive.
Yeah, and I, you know, look, if a guy goes out of bounds, I mean, is it the whole, you know, it's a whole forward progress thing, obviously, but these guys got to know that they're not guaranteed just because they go out of bounds with the help of a defender that it's going to be, you know, that the clock's going to be stopped. You got to be beelining to get out of bounds. The extra 2 yards absolutely means nothing unless, you know, you're fourth down and you're trying to get the first down here. So yeah, and then even later on in the game, didn't Bell just drop down to the ground after catching a pass over there on the side as well too? So, but you know, but at that point, look, I mean, they did. I guess if there's anything positive to take away from it, I guess, of course, it, you know, was against probably pretty much a prevent defense, was that the Steelers offense did march down the field 97 yards in 10 plays for a score. So, and a score to Kobe Hamilton at that on a very nice deep ball from Ben Roethlisberger to Kobe Hamilton. So I guess if you want to kind of, you know, have a pause.
No, it's not going to be any solace to anybody listening to this, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I don't know how to paint anything. Le'Veon Bell had a nice game, over 100 yards in yards from scrimmage, but he didn't get the ball enough, and even coming out in the second half, you know, what are you down then? I mean, you know, it's still a reasonable game, and you have to think, okay, well, Roethlisberger is coming back at that point. I mean, it's a 16-8 game. I mean, why not protect your quarterback a little bit and run the living daylights out of the ball and throw the ball to him and run those rub routes that they had success running against the Jets? And I understand, look, not wanting to force the ball to Antonio Brown, but you have got to find a way to get creative and get him the ball instead of forcing him. You know, Sammy Coates, David, played in that game. He didn't play much, but he played. And 4 times he was targeted. 2 of those were deep passes, fell incomplete. The other 2 passes that Ben threw to him were intercepted.
Yeah, the one and those were bad throws by Ben. The first one was an awful throw down into Coates' left that, you know, Rashad Jones made a play on. As we were talking about during the week, what he brought to the table when he was questionable to play, he did. The other one on the if you watched the game on television, which I'm assuming most of our listeners did, you know, they suggested that maybe he was trying to hit Jesse James on a kind of a in the flat there when he was wide open, and there's no way that he was throwing to James. I think it was just a terrible read on the defense. On an end to Coates where, you know, it was a bad throw by Ben. If he was thrown to Jesse James, I mean, it's an you know, he was high with some throws there when he came out of the half with the bad knee. But, I mean, that would be – I just can't imagine that's who he was throwing to because he missed it so bad.
No, I think he said after the game he was throwing for Coates there. So
okay, I hadn't heard
that. So, I mean, Solomon – I like Solomon Wilcott. I really do. I mean, I think he does great work. But I think he was kind of reaching there trying to explain, I don't know, it sounded like a Roethlisberger apologist on that one there. It was just a poor throw, and Ben praised the first interception, you know, on the play that he injured himself, praised the defensive back for a nice play, and yeah, it was, but I mean, I don't think that football should have been thrown at all. 2 very, very ugly interceptions that resulted in 10 putos, or as I like to call them, points off of turnovers. And I mean, you just can't give up, you know, easy points like that. And you know, you're not sticking to the run in the second half, and you're expecting Ben to work this magic again on the road, and it just didn't happen. And you know, Pro Football Focus. And I, you know, I for the life of me, David, I love the work that Pro Football Focus does, and I'll continue subscribing to it and reading and posting about their stuff. their immediate post post-game grades had Alejandro Villanueva as the top-rated Steelers offensive player. And I know people, listeners, are probably saying, well, you know, really, it's probably not hard to garner that award. But, you know, I really didn't think he played overly well. And I would think automatic.
I don't think any of them played well. I thought he played poorly. I thought, you know, DeCastro struggled at times this year. Again, you know, when you know your offense is going to be one-dimensional, guys get to tee off. And, you know, whatever you want to think about some of the guys on this team, the Dolphins team, and Dominican Sue has been good most of the year, and he is a dynamite player. He's as strong as they come. And Cameron Wake on that wide nine is a handful. And, you know, Humbert's just not going to be able to handle that. And those guys coming off the edge, I mean, Mario Williams is a guy who's done it in this league. Tell me one guy you think on the Steelers with Cam out, you know, tell me one guy you think has a better pedigree than the three guys I just mentioned. There isn't one. I mean, you know, those guys, in terms of getting after the quarterback, there's not a guy. And those guys have done it.
Yeah, and they you know, I wrote about that ahead of the game, that one of the keys to the game was watch those defensive ends, because even though they had, I think they came into the game, and I'm talking about Wake, Mario, and Jones, that they had something like 3.5 sacks, you know, something disgustingly low that you look at the names, you say, man, there's no way, you know, that's got to be a misprint how many sacks they have. But once again, we see teams, and the Eagles did this as well, that it kind of used that wide nine. And look, nobody gets a pass here, because I think on even one of those sacks, they ran an inside twist with Sue and I forget who else, and Foster just got caught, you know, not picking it up as well. And then, you know, they had pressure on the outside. And then Jesse James on one of those, you can't look, Jesse James is not there as a blocker. Yeah, he's got a long, long ways to go before he's close to being considered Heath Miller in that phase. And he probably not ever going to get there, if you ask me. But, you know, just disgusting out on that edge, and on that same play that he gets pushed back, then you had Villanueva, you know, getting pushed back on his end. So, but as a whole, and that's why I say it's hard to I for the life of me can't, and I've tried it before, can't see how you can grade this offensive line by the TV tape. I mean, it's disgustingly hard. So we'll see what the All 22 says when it comes out from the end zone view. And while it looked kind of ugly, we have seen worst offensive line performances. In other words, I think for the most part, this wasn't an overly bad offensive line performance. Does that make sense? I mean, would you agree with it, or did you just think that you saw so much bad in there that you're wanting to paint it?
Yeah, I can't imagine they're going to grade out particularly well. As you know, I just my initial reaction when it got on the postgame show was they got manhandled on both lines again, and you know, it's easy to see what happened on the defensive side of things with the yardage they were able to rack up, but I felt like offensively they got pretty dominated as well. I will say, you know, I mean, the thing is, and this is hard to know how much emphasis to put on this. You know, they did average, you know, we can throw out, even if you throw out Darius Hayward-Bey's 60-yard run, which here we are 30 minutes in and we haven't even mentioned that play. You know, they're still able to move the ball on the ground, which is, again, surprising why they didn't do more of it. And that's, look, we're not giving, nobody's giving the coaching staff a pass here. I think the offensive game plan was poor. Defensively, the Steelers decide they're going to make a change, and Sean Davis doesn't play at all. The only time he goes on the field, they've got to call a timeout because things are confused. So he's not out there at all, and you know, they get torched defensively. Kind of couldn't do anything. Couldn't stop the run. Did, you know, gave up big plays, passes over the head in the pass game. So you know, everybody's responsible here, and the coaching staff front and center is as much as anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when here's the thing, I think this. I mean, look, we know this offense can can when Roethlisberger's healthy and these guys are healthy, we know they can put up 30. Nobody's doubting that. It's just you can't have these kind of stinkers. I'd rather average 25 and score 25 every game than I would, you know, score 35 one week and 8 or 13 or what have you, you know, the next week here. So I think it's all about consistency. They're really going to have to lean on Le'Veon Bell.
Well, let me ask you this. What's your level of concern about Antonio Brown? Because this is the third game of the season out of six where he's only had four catches, and it's his second four-catch, 39-yard performance, which is basically, you know, what you expect from Marcus Wheat. And now that's happened twice from him. Is it Antonio Brown? I mean, because Byron Maxwell did an awfully good job twice on the sideline there in back-to-back plays. Ben tried to go to him, and he wasn't remotely close, and it looked like Maxwell knew that they were going to try and throw a back shoulder on those balls, and he was all over it and probably should have picked one of them. I mean, Ben had two interceptions. He could have had four. So is it Antonio Brown's not doing a job getting open because, you know, those were one-on-ones on those particular plays, or is it the other guys are such non-factors that they can roll everything at Antonio and not have to worry about anything else?
Well, I think Ben is trying to spread the ball around more often, trying not to force things into him, into Antonio. You know, I don't think we're seeing enough of these kind of slants with Antonio, some of these easier pitch and catches, if you will, right? I mean, how many times do we see these attempted back shoulder type throws over the course of the last couple of weeks that the two haven't seemed to be on the same page with? You have to try to get the football in his hands out in space however you can, whether it be a run-pass option on a screen, whether it be a quick kind of slant type of stuff. There's ways to get the football in his hands. I don't think Antonio Brown all of a sudden has become a poor route runner. I just think the two are having problems hooking up. And you know, I mean, you go back the last 2 years, how many times have we seen teams try to bracket Antonio Brown and he still has 7, 8, 9 catches for 140 yards? So, yeah, you know, I tend to put it more on the quarterback and not being able to get the football to him, and or they're not enough, not being enough weapons on the other side. I mean, look, to garner the respect and make you pay for double coverage, you know, putting a safety over top of Antonio Brown. You know, AB didn't all of a sudden become bad.
I agree.
Now
they're gonna find a way to get him more involved.
Now, how's his attitude gonna be over the course of these next few weeks? I mean, we got lambasted by a couple of listeners or two saying we were much too hard on Antonio Brown, you know, because of the whole shoe thing and stuff like that. What did you read his comments after the game yesterday?
I did not.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, all I can do. Thought I was open. I'm paraphrasing here, obviously, but you know, he's going to get real upset here if he's not getting that ball against the Patriots. I mean, he's going to get real upset.
Well, you know, that's going to be a challenge.
I mean, what if you're the Patriots? What are you doing? I mean, you're taking him away entirely. You're telling Landry Jones that I want to see you throw as many passes as you can to Le'Veon Bell out of the backfield, and we're going to attempt to tackle the catch. And sooner or later, you're going to have to make 6 throws on 3rd down and 7 during the game, and we don't think you can do it because we're going to take Antonio Brown away from you. And because of that, we're going to win the ball game because you're not converting 3rd downs and you're not finishing drives. Ha ha.
Yeah, this is a pretty easy game plan for the Pats. I mean, put 8 in the box, roll a safety on top of Antonio Brown, and say, "Have at it."
But even so, and I wrote about this early this morning. You still have to lean heavily on Antonio Brown here. You have to run the football. You have to try to get the ball to him out in space, out of the backfield. And then, you know, a lot of short passing. You know, it's obvious you got to try to get the football in the hands of Antonio Brown 7, 8, 9 times as best you can. And, yes, you're going to face some 3rd and 6s or more, probably 5 or 6 of them in this game, and you're going to have to convert at least half of these, and you're going to need an explosive play or two in this game. And, I mean, it's easy for everybody listening to this podcast and on Twitter to think the Steelers don't have a prayer. Well, it's okay to think that, but they're not going to cancel the game, right?
Right. Well, and look, Vegas is going to have them it sounds like a double digit point favorite, which is shocking. I mean, I'm if Ben were in there, I would think this game would be somewhere around pick'em. Maybe if the Steelers had come out and won the game against the Dolphins in the exact opposite fashion and it were 30-15 Steelers, it's hard for me to believe the Steelers would be an underdog in this game if Ben were healthy. But seeing what the Patriots have done with Brady for 2 games, knowing the porous Steelers defense, particularly pass defense, I'm not surprised. You know, I'll be surprised if it stays. I'll put it this way: if it stays at 10, that's not going to surprise me. I don't think it's going much higher than 10, 10.5. But if that's where it is, that's where it
is. What does the defense need to hold the Patriots under in order to have a minute chance to win?
24.
I wrote 20 or under. Do you think that the Steelers' offense can score 24 points?
I wouldn't bet on it, but they can. Yeah, sure. You get a return touchdown, and you get 2 scores and a field goal. Sure, you can do it. I mean, you know, look, they were 2-2 with Landry Jones. I mean, the whole idea that the season's over is a bit much because, you know, the Steelers, Ben missed 4 games last year. We don't expect him to miss 4 here. The Steelers went 2-2 in the 4 he lost, and even if the Steelers go, let's say he misses 3, they lose all 3. They'll be 4-5 with a lot of division games left, still control their own destiny in the division. So it's not like the season's over, even if they lose, you know, 3 straight games without him, which isn't out of the question. But it's also unlikely that they lose every game that he doesn't play, and we'll see where things go. But Dave, before we I want to ask you some questions on the quarterback situation. Before we do, remember Steelers Nation mortgage rates are about as low as the Steelers effort level yesterday. If you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact our buddy Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage, a lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native. Craig's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out our listeners. You can call Craig today at 855-961-7763. This is a new number, so make note of it. 855-961-7763, or apply online at blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320-399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. You know, we've talked about Landry Jones, and there's no doubt that Landry Jones is going to be the quarterback in the game on Sunday. Do you think there was even a conversation about saying, you know what, let's go with Zach Mettenberger? Or do you think, you know, look, they're going to have to do a lot of work with Landry Jones, so Mettenberger's not likely to get many, if any, snaps. But is there a situation here in the next 3 weeks where Zach Mettenberger is the Steeler quarterback, barring injury?
I don't see how, David. I really don't. I mean, Landry's been in this offense for years now. He would have to really, really, really stink up the. And look, I mean, we don't eat a. Are you saying that Roethlisberger is going to miss what, the next 3 games?
Let's say 3, just for conversation purposes.
All right. I mean, let's suppose. Let's speak in hype. Let's deal with hypotheticals here, and say that he misses the next 3 games. Landry would really have to crap the bed in the first 2 games before you turn to Zach Mettenberger. I mean, is that plain and simple? How many reps do you think Mettenberger has gotten since he's arrived?
Not many. I mean, obviously not many. They're starting the season. I'm trying to remember.
20? When 20? Do you think he's gotten 20 reps?
Was he here for the? Was he around for the Carolina preseason game?
No. Right? I mean, he didn't dress.
Oh, right. That's the they right. They signed him for the day before that game, right? So, you know, that week of practice, I'm sure, you know, with the extra time they had over Labor Day, a couple. But no, he's not taking reps at practice. So,
all seriousness, if you had to put an over and under, how many reps would you think that he's taken in practice? 20?
50. 10 a week.
I bet he's taking less than that. It's too bad we can't find out that number if Todd Haley would tell. I'd be willing to bet that he hadn't even taken that many reps. I bet he's lucky to. Now, obviously, scout team reps. That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking. I'm talking, you know, reps with, you know, on non-card offense, if you will. I bet he hasn't taken that many. And I mean, this is the same Zach Metten. You know, here's the narrative right now. He was surrounded by a bad team in Tennessee. Look, a quarterback's a quarterback. His film is his film up until this point. And even though I don't have a lot of confidence in Landry Jones, David, this is the same Landry Jones that really didn't look too terribly bad against Arizona. And even in his start against Kansas City, you know, I've seen worse quarterback play, right? I mean, one of those interceptions, remember, went in and out of the hands of Antonio Brown. You know, do you remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, that was a game that the Steelers really could have had, you know, and probably should have won. It was Villanueva's first start. Now, look, I'm not going to paint Landry Jones something he's not, because Lord knows that starting a year ago during the preseason, I thought the Steelers should only carry two quarterbacks, but he's the best you have right now, and I think you have to roll with him. And before we start throwing more dirt on his grave, let's just see how bad he plays against the Patriots. And I'm not getting all this, the Steelers should let Mettenberger start bull crap that's already floating around on the internet. Was his one throw absolutely poor in the game against in the loss yesterday to the Dolphins? Absolutely. Was it a poor play call? Yeah, we discussed that for 10 minutes there. Should he have seen Grimble come? Here's what I want to see before I really bash that decision there, is I want to see the all 22 to see, you know, if a defender's in his line of sight there, because it's kind of really hard to tell by the television angle. And oh yeah, if you go back and watch that play, David, it doesn't look like he got that snap clean. Did you notice that?
He did not get it clean. Yes, I did.
So what does that do to the whole timing of the play there? You know?
Oh, the whole, yeah, it was all bad.
I mean, it was a, as my old man liked to say, a shit storm right from the start. But this is Landry's game against the Patriots. Let's see what happens. But yeah, I don't even think, you know, with your scenario of Roethlisberger missing three games, and God knows, let's hope that's not the case. But if it is, I think Landry Jones would really have to stink it up in the first two games before you turn to Zach Mettenberger. Now, conditioning. You're going to Florida. You're playing in the sun and all like that. What's the deal with all those cramps yesterday?
Absolutely indefensible, inexcusable. I don't know what the deal is, but this is on the training staff and the players. They've got to be told, you know, all week long, 72 hours before the game, focus on hydration. Jesus, I mean, Vince Williams went to Florida State. He's played football in Florida before. Half these guys, you know, 20% of the guys on the team are Florida guys. They know what it's like. They have to be educated about hydration. And to have guys going off, DHB, Vince Williams, I guess a couple of others, going off in this game because they were dehydrated, that is completely on the coaching, training staff, and the players as well. That's inexcusable stuff.
Wow.
Honestly, somebody's not going to convince me otherwise, but saying, you know, you haven't played a sport, it's really hot. I have. I understand. I got it. I've got no time for that one.
Yeah, and although I played sports and didn't play them well, I played them in the state of Florida as well too. So,
yeah. Well, you play soccer in Western Pennsylvania in summer, and it's 90 degrees and humid. It's, you know, it's those kind of conditions.
Try tackling Emmett Smith on a steamy Florida night. But with all that said, I mean, it makes you kind of wonder. I mean, a lot of these players played their college football in the state of Florida, and some of these are the ones that went off the field. And why do you think teams make the Steelers wear these black jerseys on the road, right?
Yeah, although I'm not even going to put it on that.
It's just one more thing, though, right? I mean, it makes you kind of feel probably pretty miserable out there in 80 degrees with that type of humidity and wearing black and oh yeah, you didn't drink enough Gatorade or water or something like that. More than anything, with Tomlin having this team prepared and yada yada and playing down the sub 500 and all like that, that's the thing I'd like to hear Tomlin asked about.
Oh, there will be. I will be asking that question.
Ask about the most.
Don't worry, because that to me is inexcusable. I'm going to say who's at fault here.
And if
his answer better not be nobody's at fault.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting for sure. And what do you think about Roethlisberger coming back in the game? I mean,
With 50 seconds left. With 50 seconds left, that point?
Well, no, I'm talking about after the half. I mean, should they have waited to find? I mean, look, he knew something wasn't right with his knee.
I can't answer the question of can he do further damage to it. Yeah, the answer is you can always get hurt more. I mean, it might not be the exact same injury, but you can get hurt more. But I will say, again, indefensible to have him in there with 50 seconds left, down 15 on their own 40. When he's getting – that's when he hurt his other knee. He got banged up because did you hear the TV commentary? I was walking between studios in the postgame show. I think the line was he's getting thrown around like a rag doll. When have you ever heard that about Ben Roethlisberger? So, A, he's somewhat impaired. So, okay, now the result is complete. And B, you're putting him at further risk here in a game where you got no chance. I just think it was a terrible decision.
Yeah, and we talk about – and I think we got beat up a little bit about this topic by a few listeners in some emails, right, about get off him for not wanting – nobody – look, no, we're not on Roethlisberger for not wanting to come out of the game. That's not where our issue lies here. Of course he's not going to want to come out of the game. The issue is Tomlin's got to pull him out of the game.
Exactly. This is why you have a head coach.
I mean that, and I think I don't know where a couple of our listeners got mixed up there. If Roethlisberger was missing two limbs, and there's been some games where it seems pretty close to that, and he still wants to come in the game. I would expect nothing but that from him. But there comes a time where Mike Tomlin's got to say, you just got to handcuff him to the bench, and that's that. He's going to have to get over it. I get the whole leader mentality and be out there with my guys. And we discussed this already. And at that point, we don't know how much further damage he could have done at that point. And trust me, he was obviously handicapped. You can look at some of the throws that he made in that second half and tell that he wasn't stepping into him and whatnot. But boy, what a mess, David. What a mess. Is this a Super Bowl team? Can this team win the Super Bowl? This team win the Super Bowl?
Well, look, and I get asked this about the Penguins this week. Here's the answer. I will always say, if you ask me about a specific team, I'll say no. In any sport, because you're picking one out of 30, and to pick one out of 30 or 32, whatever it would be, is idiotic. Now, if you say pick a team to win the Super Bowl or pick a team to win the Stanley Cup, yeah, I might pick the Penguins to win the Stanley Cup. You're going to say, will they win the Stanley Cup? I'm going to say no, if you understand what the differentiation is. I would no longer be picking the Steelers to win the Super Bowl. And can they win it? Sure, they can, but I'd probably take about six or eight teams ahead of them now, including the Dallas Cowboys.
Is this a championship defense? I mean, no, it's not. What would you rather have? Would you rather have the league's best defense or the league's best offense?
And the other would be league average. I'd take the league's best offense if the other's league average. Unfortunately, the Steelers right now are proven maybe they don't have the league's best offense and their defense is not league average.
I don't know. I think I'd rather have the league's and if we're and of course you know I'm going to go straight to the ANY NEA stat here. I would much rather have the number one team ranked in that than I would the number one team offensive statistic related to that. There are times during a season, David, where a team needs their defense to win them some ball games in the regular season. Yesterday should have been one of those days, and it didn't happen. When you get into the playoffs, you can advance out of the wild card game, or you can advance out of the divisional round with a subpar defense, because you're probably going to be playing, if you got a good offense, your chances are you might be playing another team with a subpar defense. So you can win those games. You cannot win a Super Bowl with a below average or average defense, in my opinion. I just don't think you can do it. And this team, draw all the parallels you want going back to the 2005 or 2008 or 2010 season. This defense is, I mean, it's Captain Obvious statement here, is not anywhere close to the quality of those teams. And remember that.
All right, so let me throw a couple things at you. One, for Will Gay dropped an interception. That was a big play in the game we didn't touch on. And what about, first of all, I mean, this annoyed the daylights out of me, and I tempered it when I mentioned it on Twitter. How about Artie Burns chirping early in that game, patting a guy, like somebody patted a guy on a helmet. I can't remember if that was Burns. Mike Mitchell, again, getting 2 15-yarders, one unnecessary roughness, one unsportsmanlike conduct. I mean, what's up with those guys in the defensive backfield? I could not believe Artie Burns was chirping away at the beginning of that game.
Yeah, and especially early, too, when and that was one of those ones where he just ran the guy out of bounds, right?
Yep.
I mean, at least if you're going to talk crap, hit somebody like Mike Mitchell, right?
who I'm sure is not on anybody's favorites list right now with two more penalties.
No, that's 30. You want to talk about hidden yardage? That's 33 yards right there, and it's hard. I'm going to have to write about it at some point during this week, I think, because that – look, I get it. Mike Mitchell, you're a badass. I'm sure when teams look at tapes and these receivers go, man, I'm not so sure I want to catch a football over the middle. I get it. But, man, let your hitting do the talking. You don't have to do all this other stuff. And 15 yards at a time is a lot to swallow. And you know, not that it would have made a difference in the game. We don't know how that stuff is going to ultimately play out. But yeah, and Artie Burns has got it. Got no. He's done absolutely nothing to talk right now. And William Gay. I mean, you can't in a team that struggles to get sacks and turnovers, letting those balls, and how many is Ross Cockrell? How many balls this year? Mike Mitchell, I think, has had one. I think Ryan Shazier. How many almost interceptions have the Steelers had this year? Five? Six?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's always good. That's going to be the case with every NFL team. But, yeah, they've certainly had some. I mean, Will Gaze was about as, you know, clear and easy as you can get.
Cockrell's had three, though, right?
They don't all jump out at me right in my mind's eye right now, so I'll take your word for it.
I'll go back and count those boogers along with everything else we try to document. What else? Where else was I going to go with this?
Well, you know, the other thing is, it's not all wine and roses everywhere else either, as Aaron Rodgers is getting all the national attention. Ben's getting very little of it, surprisingly, and Aaron Rodgers is getting all of it for his performance where, you know, he was significantly better than Ben yesterday, but not good enough as the Packers lost. So, you know, it's the NFL. If you're not great every week, you're going to hear it from your fans.
You know what you call an almost interception, right?
Incompletion.
Well, look, let's end with a positive, David. The other three teams in the AFC North lost on Sunday.
Yeah, as we expected. You know, there were a very good chance of that, and a chance to put some real distance between the Steelers and the field, two up on the Ravens and three-plus up on the Bengals with the head-to-head win, but that didn't happen. So, and remember, Steeler fans, mortgage rates currently at or near all-time lows. If you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact Craig Oxen from First Advantage Mortgage. Craig's a lifelong Steeler fan, a Pittsburgh native, but nationally recognized lender who'd love the opportunity to help our listeners out. We've got a new phone number to call Craig, 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Or you can apply online at blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Yeah, and, you know, there are a lot of guys in the doghouse, speaking of housing, for the Steelers. And I don't know that there'll be lineup changes, but it's going to be interesting to see how Carnell Lake and Keith Butler deal with the secondary stuff. Sean Davis not playing at all in this game. How are they going to line that up? What are they going to do about getting pressure on the quarterback? Obviously, the question is about Landry Jones getting more reps. Is Wheaton going to be back at receiver? Can you get Eli Rogers more involved? He had a couple catches, but a drop. Is Kobe Hamilton going to go back to the practice squad? You know, all sorts of things. We'll see. We'll see if Marcus Gilbert's back this week. So a lot of these things we'll probably have a better sense of after the pressure tomorrow.
Yeah, Ladarius Green now is eligible to practice. It'll be interesting to see if he not only practices – but can get back for this game as well, too. I have my gut feeling tells me he'll practice this week, but he won't be ready to be activated. Because think about it. If you do activate him to the 53, you got to cut somebody on top of it. And if he's only in the condition where he's only going to play 9 or 10 snaps, I think that's got to factor into this decision. So, personally, I would not be surprised if Ladarius practices – but we don't see him activated to the 53-man roster until after the bye week. And then, Shazier, is he going to make it back? I don't think we're expecting Cameron Hayward to be back this week.
I don't expect any of the injured guys to be back, to be honest with you.
And that includes Shazier?
Yes.
Wheaton?
You know, he would be the only one, but, you know, he didn't practice last week, so I'm guessing
no. Why the hell do you even need Cody Wallace at this point?
Yeah, you know, you don't, and it'll be interesting to see here when Ladarius Green gets activated, you know, whether that's this week or 2 weeks from now, who the odd man out is. Is it, you know, they go with four receivers or, you know, five? Who goes? I don't know who goes. You would think it's going to be, you know, Filer. If Wallace is healthy, you'd think Filer would be the obvious guy to go. But, you know, if guys are still banged up, I'm not sure who goes.
We'll end with this. Was yesterday the game that they missed Martavis Bryant the most?
God, the way things went, I'm not sure that would have made the difference, honestly. I mean, you know, Sammy effectively didn't play. So, you know, missing both those guys certainly hurts. But I'll just come back to, you know, as bad as the offense was, the defense just couldn't do anything right. And, you know, we forgot Devontae Parker's dropped touchdown pass in the Dolphins' first possession. I mean, we talked about 10 points on the board. That's, you know, 14 points on the board that they left. This defense wasn't stopping anybody, so I'm not sure if you put Lynn Swann and John Stallworth out there that it would have been any better.
And I think when you dig through these stats and all, too, you'll see that Eli Rogers had, four catches for 35 yards. But let's remember, three of those catches came on the –
second to last drive, and
he had one absolutely horrible drop in the game on that same drive, I think, and you know, I don't think that overshadows the one very impressive catch throw behind him that he had earlier in the game. So you know, not a great first first game back for Eli Rogers. Kobe Hamilton, look, I mean, anytime you get something out of a guy like that, you gotta be happy. Jesse James, only two catches, and I think really both of those were kind of like slip screen kind of catches for 13 yards. Xavier Grimble, just one catch, and Ben overthrew him on one of those kind of out routes. You kind of wish, you know, I think Ben should have made that catch. Didn't complete a catch to Darius Hayward Bay or Sammy Coates in this game, and that really, really hurt. And boy, this team, a lot to figure. It's going to be an interesting week, Dave, and I'm sure we're going to have a lot to talk about here. Trying to paint this thing in a positive manner as best we can for this upcoming game against the Patriots. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at TerriblePodcast@gmail.com. Answer this question: would you rather have the league's best defense or the league's best offense? And if you can't have either, the opposite would have to be middle of the pack or lower in order to for you to get your choice. Send that to theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to donate to the show, you can go to SteelersDepot.com, find the donate button in the upper right navigational bar. We ran real long again, David, but we had a lot to talk about. So stop the run here for us.
All right, as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.